Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki Balancing Form and Essence. Well, here we are back. It's February 25th, and I've had my last chemotherapy treatment yesterday, which was not bad. And at the end, all the nurses came in and blew bubbles and said congratulations and took pictures and made this little ceremony about the end of my chemotherapy, so it made me cry. And I've been in a really soft space after that and feeling like it's time to celebrate, but I don't know quite what I'm celebrating. And today on our show, and I'm glad that I can bring you a show today, we're going to resume our exploration of oral tradition. And this particular segment will segue into the next month, which is March, and the topic of that month is history. So there's a lot of things to be said about the history of our practice and of Reiki in general, and how it has come down to us through an oral tradition. What does that mean? You know, what do we do when we hear discrepancies? And what is actually the value of oral tradition? Should we be writing this down so that it becomes hard fact, whatever that means? So all these questions, will just keep those in mind as we go through these next three or four programs. Today with oral tradition, I have with me Lita Perry, she's from Italy, and Donna Stetzer from North Carolina, USA. And we're going to do a discussion group. And one of the things that I would like to do in the beginning, after they introduce themselves, is to play a little segment from one of my grandmother's tapes that she made in 1978. These tapes were to be transcribed and published as a book by Barbara Weber, actually. And this did not happen, because she died in 1980 just as the tapes were being transcribed. And, they must have been recorded in 1979, sorry. And after she died, my mother took possession of the tapes and the transcripts, and they were not published. So I'm using them a little bit so that you can hear Hawaii Otakata, her voice, her inflection, and perhaps receive a message from her through the oral tradition that will be specific just for you. So I'd like to welcome Lita and Donna to the program. Say hello, girls.
Hello. Hi, girls. No.
Hello.
So who would like to go first?
I'll go. I'm Donna Stetzer from North Carolina, and I'm really grateful to have been invited to spend this time with you. Thank you, Phyllis, and thank you, Lita. I have a treatment and teaching practice there at my center, and my partner has a massage therapy practice. And I've just, you know, I've been very fortunate in my journey with Reiki. I continue to have gifts placed at my feet, such as this opportunity and other opportunities to just discover more and more about the different elements and aspects. And so I'm excited to see where this discussion takes us this morning.
Mm-hmm. Great. Yes. Lita?
Hello, good morning. As Phyllis said, I come from Italy. I live in Milano. And it's been great to be here where the sun shines most of the time. And I work as a psychologist. I have an office in Milano, and I also, of course, teach Reiki and rebirthing. And I've been a master since 1993, and I'm always amazed how my process in mastery is never ended, and it brings me to deeper understanding. So I'm looking forward to this discussion to explore where I am with the oral tradition. And I'm really excited about listening to Takata's voice, because I've never heard it before. So thank you for this opportunity.
You're welcome. Thank you. Wonderful. So let's see, where do we go from here? I think that we'll play this excerpt and just sit back and listen, and when we're finished, we're going to take a few moments of silence. So if you think that we're off the air, we're not. Just go inside yourself and be with yourself, and we'll collect our thoughts and then share afterwards, okay? All right, so this is going to be a first time that I'm trying to do this on the air. We'll see if it works out. Okay, just a moment. Pause.
And this experience, although I'm a Reiki master, I did not have in person. But I was very happy to know, because Reiki works on everything that has life, including the animal and also the fowl and also the plant life, as well as, of course, the human being. So everything that has life, Reiki is applied and they benefit. And this is one time that I was told about their experiences, which I did not have, but I learned from these cowboys, which was very, very good experience. Yes. And then also, there were chicken farmers. And the chicken farmer said, we have mass production. In a brooder, there are 100 chicks. And in the brooder, during the winter, it is cold. Then we put light on to keep them warm. But then in the morning, when I bring in the feed, I spread my hands inside the brooder. And I Reiki every single chick, day-old chick, and vitalize them. They get very frisky, flap their wings, and they begin to be very lively. And I treat them for 15 minutes every day. And that brought them a healthy batch. So then all the chicken growers became very happy, and their production and the eggs, all the chicken growers became very prosperous. So I learned also from the chicken farmers about treating the little chicks in the brooder. So everything that Reiki touches and Reiki is applied, it did its job, and very good job. There are many new experiences. And one of the cowboys, he was using a gasoline lawnmower, cutting the grass. And one day, the lawnmower stuck. So without turning off the switch, he put one finger to remove that little piece of rock or dirt or something, or wood. And then when that was removed, all of a sudden, the blade began to whirl. And then, naturally, he lost one finger. But at the class, he had learned his lesson very well. I said, anything acute that happens now, he said, will heal immediately. And so he tried. He picked up the finger and he stuck it where it came off, took off his neckerchief. The cowboys always wear handkerchief, He took his red handkerchief off, and then he wrapped it up, and he held it for half an hour. And he felt that there was a thump, thump, as if there was a beating or like a vibration going through. And then the pain was no more. And then the numbness was no more. And then he looked at his finger, and the finger was back. And so he said, I'm not going to abuse this finger. So I'm going to bandage it up and treat again and again. And so he had the bandage on for 3 days. He did not remove the bandage. And he worked on it every spare moment and every minute whenever he had time. And he said, I have my finger back, normal. Not even a scar. And then there was... Pardon?
He told you about that?
Oh, yes, because I give those lectures in the class, you know. When
then he came and told you what happened.
But well, he showed me. He showed me, and so I saw his finger back. But we all, he said, now, because this is healed, could be a laughing matter. But otherwise, he said, I'll be crippled. And so therefore, Reiki, you know, I give credit to Reiki. I said, yes. But it's a good thing you took the lesson.
Welcome back. And somehow I feel like I'm in another world. I should have told you perhaps that the setting for her stories, these stories that she was telling, is on the Big Island in Kamuela, which is an old town on the north side of the island, and it's right next to the Parker Ranch. And the Parker Ranch was one of the largest, if not the largest, singly owned ranch in the world for a time. And she lived up there and had a lot of Reiki classes in Kamuela in the early days. So she was talking about cowboys and chicken farmers and different things. So I'm wondering how that was for you to hear her voice.
Well, I feel as if I'm in another time. I felt there was such a softness to her voice while she spoke, and yet what was happening as I listened was so powerful. The story was, of course, interesting, and but there was more to it than that. There was it touched me. It took me to a place that's both amazing and familiar, and recognizable. and hard to talk about.
Uh-huh.
Hard for me to find words about it. I remembered a book that I had read while I was listening, and it's a book called She Who Remembers. And it reminded me that, you know, in so many cultures, it's important for the storytellers to be a part of that, to hold the stories, to tell the stories. And it's not, again, it's not so much the content of the stories as it is the telling of them, and the telling of them, and the hearing them, and the vibration of the voice that's speaking, and
mm-hmm.
all of the experience that's in the person that's carrying the stories, and how that comes out. And you know, I imagine, as is my experience, it comes out different every time you tell the story, based on who's listening.
Uh-huh. And,
yeah, so that's about as many words as I can come up with at the moment.
Thank you. Thank you. Lita?
Yes, I concur with Donna. That is an experience that is difficult to put into words. And I felt also really warm and vibrating. And it is true that the words carry an energy of the meaning, and that resonates. It resonated inside of me, and I felt as if it awoken memories of things that I don't know I know, and so it was a very powerful experience. Also, it reminded me again and again the healing power of Reiki. That sometime maybe we take for granted. And also, as Donna was saying, the importance of having someone, a storyteller, that carries the energy of the history. And Takata did that today. She carried the energy of the history of the sharing. In the sharing, there is a exchange of knowledge. It is a very moving experience to hear her. And it feels like my cells woken up to an old memory. Mm-hmm. So I'm really grateful for this experience.
Mm-hmm. So there's a little part of me that wonders, I hate to run out of words because we're obviously on a radio show, so but I also don't want to get too much in our minds, and perhaps, listeners, you will concur. But there's a part about it that, of course, for me, brings back, I can see her, I close my eyes, I can see her talk, I can hear her, I can hear her voice, and it reminds me of her mannerisms. It also reminds me of how old she was, and how when she would get tired, she would start repeating herself or not find the correct word at the beginning, but say a phrase and then say it over again. And, you know, even still, she carried something in the way that she spoke, but also in the things that she didn't say. This was always so fascinating for me, that there was a cleanness to her communication, if I may go into this word, that was not about, I'm hiding something from you, or we're not talking about that, or because she never thought of it. She never thought about quantum physics. She didn't think about spiritual healing in that way. She didn't think about angels or extra sensory things. It was totally a clear process of a physical nature that was inexplicable for her. except the explanation was Reiki. And this particular message for me, I feel, has permeated my own practice and also sometimes makes me really impatient with people who are into phenomenology, in the sense of listing all the things that one can do with Reiki and how it proves that Reiki works. And there's the part that I loved about this particular piece, which is one of the reasons why, of course, I chose it out of 23 tapes, was this part about, even though I'm a master, these stories reminded me of the things that I know about Reiki. And I feel like that to be true for myself today. I've done Reiki in many, many situations for years and years, like over 30 years. And still, you know, little daily things that happen that are attributable to my practice of Reiki always astonish me. And that sense of innocence and wonder and a straightforward connection with the energy of Reiki is what draws me to the practice. And that particular message for me is something that I really get when I listen to her stories.
Yes, I wholeheartedly agree. I couldn't have put that into words, but that's really alive in there for me as well. And that's the piece that really supports me. You know, knowing that Mrs. Takata Sensei carried this simplicity and understanding all the time. Mm-hmm. And I got it. I got it because she did that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it came through many people before I received Reiki. I mean, but it was, yeah, I get that that's a big piece of it.
Mm-hmm.
After listening to you talk about your reflections, you know, of how she spoke and that was a constant.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Huh. Yeah, she spoke through a pure heart, and so the words has really a big impact, this wonder and innocence, which for me it's a goal. Sometime I'm there, sometime I'm not, but it's always something that I want to feel that, because it's so rich and so nurtured, and it goes so deep in my understanding of Reiki when I can receive, as I did today through her words, this energy of a pure heart. I don't know how to say it in any different way. It's like her heart, as you said, she's clean, but it's even more than that. It's like the wonder of a child that has discovered or is constantly seeing a wonder of a practice, without having to think about it or prove it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, children just take what it is with what it is.
Uh-huh.
And that's the energy that I get from her story. It's beautiful.
Yeah, and I'm sitting here listening to you both, and I'm realizing that in my most recent classes, first degree classes, innocence and surrender to not knowing how something works has been a predominant piece that the students have drawn out of me. You know, we've talked a lot about that. So, even though it's always a part, it seems to be a real alive part in my experience, in my teaching experience recently. You know, just a little aside that jumped into my head.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the things that I value the most. I value highly being able to just put my hands on and see what happens and not have to know, you know, or anticipate or anything like that.
Well, perhaps that's something that we get reminded as masters when we teach, and as a part of the gift of teaching first-degree students, is this reminder of the wonder and the innocence mm-hmm. and the discovery and so on. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I've been... Now, I just reflect on that when mm-hmm. you were speaking about your first-degree classes and how that's happened for you, like what's been going on for you in those. And it's a nice way, because sometimes, you know, with oral tradition, you wonder if it gets boring telling these stories over and over again. Or, you know, if we change them because they happen to be more exciting or more interesting or whatever. And that doesn't seem true for me in my own experience of practice. Does that seem true for you too?
Well, I've been thinking about that as I was listening. I've noticed that in all these years of teaching classes, the way I tell the story has changed. Maybe the words have not changed, but definitely my understanding of it has changed.
Uh-huh.
And every time I get a new piece, and I am confident that it comes through the energy of the way I say it to uh-huh. the class. And I have noticed that if in the beginning there was this little push to explain it and maybe put in some scientific sort of pieces to make it more believable, all of that has just been dropped as my understanding of the story has deepened and has become really energetic that I uh-huh. give to the class. And so it's just always when I start a first degree, I think to myself, well, let's see how this is going to come out today. Because I know it is a reflection of my understanding at that moment uh-huh. of Reiki. Because uh-huh. the story is a beautiful metaphor for Reiki. Everything that Reiki is in that story, in the Usuisi story.
So you're speaking about what we call the history of Reiki.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And so that's been very, very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what about the stories that you tell in your class? Like, do you have your own stories that you tell about your, you know, when you first had Reiki or, you know, the first kind of Reiki miracle that you had and those stories? What does that feel like when you tell them now?
One of my favorite story is my initiation story, because uh-huh. it is kind of a synchronicity between my master and I in the choosing of the place.
Oh, well, why don't you tell us the story?
My master is Marta Ghetti, and in my training one day we were on a train going to a class in northern Italy, and she asked me, well, she said, did you have a vision? And I was taken back, and I thought, oh my God, if to become a master I have to have a vision, that will never happen to me. because I'm not a person that has a vision. So I sort of said, well, no. And then later on she asked again, and I got enough nerve to ask, well, what do you mean by vision? And she said, well, where would you want to have your initiation? And I said, I have two places in my mind. One is Assisi, but that doesn't feel quite right. And then I keep getting this vision of a desert with red rocks and caves. But I think maybe I've been watching too many cowboy movies and maybe it's just some interference. But she stopped and she said, oh, she said, I know that place. She said, it's in New Mexico. And I said, oh, I'm going to New Mexico in August. And she said, oh, I'm going to be there. And we exchanged dates, and it was exactly where I was planning to go there. And so she decided that that would be a good time to do it, and a perfect place to do it. And when we went to this place, it was a Bandelier Park, National Park, and it was exactly what I had dreamed of.
Wow.
And so it was just a beautiful experience. And she organized the whole day, and it was one of those days where, and that for me is a miracle, that I remember from the moment I woke up to the moment I went to bed. I still remember everything that I did, everything that I saw, experienced. I was so present.
Wow.
And that has been just a really, it's a nice story that I like to tell. So thank you for this
example. Oh, it's
a great story.
So that's what Reiki does for me, makes me more present. And for me, that's one of the miracles. And I feel also in the students, they get more, they have that experience of being more present to themselves.
What about you, Donna? And your stories, I mean, do you find them, the energy with which you're telling them, changing these days and perhaps becoming simpler, or...
Yes, and I realize that whether I'm telling the history story or a personal story, if I just relax my mouth and start talking, that the students draw from me what they need to hear, and I tell the story that best fits, or I'll find myself spending a little more time on one part of the history, you know, or something like that. And I just feel in the moment of the telling that so many people behind me that are, you know, telling it. That's what I notice more, is all the people lined up behind me speaking through me. And yeah, really a sweet experience.
So who do you have an idea or a sense of who these people are that are behind you?
Well, for sure the spiritual lineage of the practice, and you know, my own personal lineage is present, and I feel I feel the culture of Japan, somehow the people from Japan. After having been there, something shifted. After having visited Japan, something really shifted in telling the story. And it's almost as if fewer words express more. Sometimes, you know, and the words that come from my mouth aren't coming necessarily from my left brain, and they're perfect for that, for the group that's listening. So, yeah, that sort of thing.
Right. Well, I found it interesting in this particular excerpt that at the very end, when she is speaking about this man who cut off his finger and then put it back on, which actually I've had innumerable students of different varying degrees of cutting their finger off, from a fingertip to, you know, really cutting a finger off, have actually experienced the same thing. But I noticed that at the end, the person who's doing the recording goes, well, did they come and tell you about it? Did they show you the thing? Right. You know, and she's going, well, yeah, you know, they showed me. So it's interesting that sometimes we can get caught up in our beliefs about whether or not the stories are true, to somehow, you know, depending on where you're listening from, you know, letting go of sort of the, I don't know, the feeling part of it. I don't know if feeling is quite the right word. So when we talk about oral tradition, what I'm trying to get to is that oral tradition is not just about how knowledge is passed on through the voice, but also how we hear it. And the hearing is interesting. So I felt like the person who was recording and being with her was hearing it through a kind of factual, you know, get this recording down and get all the information. And what you two have reflected upon just in this little time has been the feelings that have been touched in you and the line of energy that has been awakened in you. So it's a very interesting, well, I would say that there are all these different perspectives that you can hear a story from, and these are two that are very different. So I'm wondering about if you had noticed that and how that was for you, and does anything come up for you as I'm
noticed that in the recording?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did, and what's coming to my mind right now is I'm realizing that in the recent years, before I tell the story, the history, I ask my first degree students to listen with all their ears, not just the ones on the side of their head.
Uh-huh.
You know, and they get that phrase, they understand it.
Uh-huh.
And I believe that it makes a huge difference, because what I've seen is I really don't receive very many questions about the story or about, similar to that, you know, well, how could that really be? Did that really happen? I don't get those kinds of questions. I get questions that indicate they've taken it in.
Uh-huh.
And that they're beginning to embody their practice from that moment.
Uh-huh.
So.
Interesting.
Yeah.
How about you, Lita?
Yes. That was a good sharing, Donna, I also ask the students to just listen to the story, the history, with their own body rather than the head. Mm-hmm. And in times, I have noticed that, as I said before, the deeper I go in my understanding of the practice and my mastery and the story, the classes respond in a different way. So the level of the response is not rational anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, like you said, there mm-hmm. aren't many questions that indicates that they want to know the facts, mm-hmm. but there are more sharing of how they felt, or just this almost sacred silence mm-hmm. after the story ends. There's mm-hmm. this silence mm-hmm. that it feels like that the story is holding the energy of mm-hmm. the group,
mm-hmm. uh-huh.
or yeah. the group is holding the energy of the story, mm. and it's really a magic moment. Mm. I really love that
yeah.
when that happens. That's because mm. then it feels like there is, like you said before, there are many levels of understanding. You know, there is in the head with factual, and mm. there is also the feeling and also the energetics. And it's really magic when that happens.
It is. Mm. I just had an image come to mind, two images, and one is seeing myself and hearing myself tell the story and all that brings me and the student, and then imagining myself with little folders passing out a written version of it and little charts and little graphs and things like that, and going, whoa, what a difference that would be in what a difference in the class. You know, if oral tradition were not a part of this practice.
Oh, I see where you're going.
Yeah, sorry. I'm still having my vision here, sorry.
Great.
Get in my head. No.
No.
Scary. If oral tradition were not a part of this practice, mm-hmm. I don't think I would want to practice it. I don't think I would be drawn to it. I don't think I would be sustained by it in the same way.
Uh-huh.
Because there's such a gift in the telling, too. Uh-huh. Not just the listening, but the telling.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Do you agree?
Yes, I agree.
And you know what's interesting? That both of you have sort of automatically, though I introduced it at the beginning, but have sort of automatically, when we talk about story, you go to the history. But, you know, there are stories, our own stories and so on, that we tell, that we also are accruing, I would say, mm-hmm. or this is my belief anyway, we're like accruing history with those stories. And as we accrue history over the years of, I told it 10 times and now I've told it 50 times and then I've told it 150 times. Mm-hmm. And as you're saying that, I just think, well, and as I tell these stories of my own, they also acquire this substance, whatever we call it, of oral tradition. And it's a very interesting one because it means that it has to be brought out and shared. I think about this wonderful image that I had when I was just first initiated as a master. And I hung out in British Columbia a lot in the Kootenai region. And there are a lot of people up there who are Native Americans and who follow the Native American tradition. And I had my grandmother bought me a medicine bag, and which I wore around my neck for many years. And I would put little special medicine in it. And one of the Indian women said, well, you know, they're really for you to sustain you. And when you open your pouch to tell the stories of what's in it, that's sharing of your medicine. Mm. And you have to be mindful of when you share your medicine.
Mm.
So I just think that our stories that we share in our classes, that's when we open our like little Reiki medicine pouch
mm-hmm.
and share these pieces of our own medicine, and that touches the students. So, you know, I felt the same way maybe, you know, just as I'm saying this, I realized that I could also, although she wouldn't like it for me to link these two things together, I also felt that same energy in my grandmother's telling of these two little stories about the chicken farmers mm-hmm. and putting their hands in the brooders
mm-hmm.
and the man who cut off his finger, that these are part of her own medicine that mm-hmm. she's telling. And, you know, it gives it another perspective in another way, mm-hmm. another way of listening to it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, and hearing you tell the story, you know, yours makes me realize how important it is to include my personal stories in the class as well.
Yes.
And not, you know, it's not just about the story.
Right.
It's about story.
Right.
And sharing and, you know.
Right.
I love the analogy of that the Native
yeah.
woman offered.
Yeah. Sharing medicine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There is another level that,
yeah.
And I liked it very much when Mrs. Takata asked the cowboy what was the teaching for the finger.
Ah, right.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think the way that I share my stories is, in a way, is to look at the divine intelligence of Reiki. Because even the most difficult situation that develops after you send Reiki or you give Reiki to a person as developments that my own mind couldn't fathom, mm. you know, the results.
Uh-huh.
But there are results that are the best they could be for that situation. And
uh-huh.
that always fascinates me, to look at what happened afterwards, what are the ramifications of the situation that has sometime blown up or sometime developed
mm-hmm.
for the person involved.
Mm-hmm.
What were the teaching? And that is, for me, it's just fascinating to look at how Reiki has responded at best.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, even when the situation apparently was disastrous.
Right.
But afterwards, if you wait a minute, you know, you can tell that the energy was just going toward equilibrium and harmony.
Mm-hmm.
And so, to me, since I have the tendency to be always wanting results right away, that has been a good teaching for me to wait a minute and see where the results were.
Mm-hmm.
Not to be rushing a judgment or getting impatient because it's not happening fast
mm-hmm.
enough.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I share the stories where in the end they can see that the energy worked for the best for everyone.
Uh-huh.
At a very high level.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great. Well, this seems like a really good place to end. And I wonder if that's true for the both of you.
It's true for me.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't stop the feelings from going through.
Mm-hmm.
No. And I want to thank both of you very much for sharing this time.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Thank you for asking us.
And for you listeners, I'd just like to close the program by saying this, that oral tradition is something that a lot of people think is passé. And in our information age, we tend to concentrate on the information on the kind of what we might call factual level, whatever that means. But one of the gifts for me of Reiki is to have the oral tradition so that we may see that there are many other perspectives of the facts that aren't necessarily linear, aren't necessarily logical, and aren't necessarily in keeping with what we expect. Lita said something about divine intelligence, and my grandmother never used any kind of descriptors for Reiki. Reiki was Reiki. And one of the things that is a kind of an explanation of, well, what is Reiki is that it has this characteristic of divine intelligence. But for me, what happens if we are able to let that piece go, and I know that many of us have our own ideas about what Reiki is, like unconditional love or whatever, that it really is, well, the only other word that I have heard my grandmother talk about is God power. And that's also undefinable for me. So it is for me a way of opening up limitless possibilities, that there's no boundary around it. There's no conceptual boundary around it. And I think that oral tradition allows us, you know, sort of the challenge of not interpreting, the challenge of not putting our own two cents in. And at the same time, when we do that, it allows us to learn our lesson in that moment and then take the next step. So I'm always fascinated by this whole process of oral tradition and what it brings to us. I would like to say that this has been a wonderful time for me to have this discussion. I'm planning on having more in the future in the radio show. And I'm going to sign off for now. But I want you to stay tuned because I want you to have another experience of this, of listening to Hawaii Otakata. So after I sign off, there'll be a little bit of a pause, and then we'll play the same excerpt again. And it'll just be that without anything around it. And I really encourage you to sit, be with yourself, see where it takes you, and enjoy the ride. The Ride of the Oral Tradition. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, balancing form and essence.
And this experience, although I'm a Reiki master, I did not have in person. But I was very happy to know, because Reiki works on everything that has life, including the animal and also the fowl and also the plant life, as well as, of course, the human being. So everything that has life, Reiki is applied and they benefit. And this is one time that I was told about their experiences, which I did not have, but I learned from these cowboys, which was very, very good experience. Yes. And then also, there were chicken farmers. And the chicken farmers said, "We have mass production. In a brooder, there are 100 chicks. And in the brooder, during the winter, it is cold. Then we put light on to keep them warm. But then in the morning, when I bring in the feed, I spread my hands inside the brooder and I reiki every single chick, day old chick, and vitalize them. They get very frisky, flap their wings, and they begin to be very lively. And I treat them for 15 minutes every day. And that brought them a healthy batch. So then all the chicken growers became very happy, and their production and the eggs, all the chicken growers became very prosperous. So I learned also from the chicken farmers about treating the little chicks in the brooder. So everything that Reiki touches and Reiki is applied, it did its job, and very good job. And many new experiences. And one of the cowboys, he was using a gasoline lawnmower, cutting the grass. And one day, the lawnmower stuck. So without turning off the switch, he put one finger to remove that little piece of rock or dirt or something, or wood. And then when that was removed, all of a sudden, the blade began to whirl. And then naturally he lost one finger. But at the class, he had learned his lesson very well. I said, "Anything acute that happens now," he said, "will heal immediately." And so he tried. He picked up the finger and he stuck it where it came off, took off his neckerchief. The cowboys always wear neckerchief. He took his red neckerchief off and then he wrapped it up. And he held it for half an hour. And he felt that there was a thump, thump, as if there was a beating or like a vibration going through. And then the pain was no more. And then the numbness was no more. And then he looked at his finger, and the finger was back. And so he said, "I'm not going to abuse this finger." So I'm going to bandage it up and treat again and again. And so he had the bandage on for 3 days. He did not remove the bandage. And he worked on it every spare moment and every minute whenever he had time. And he said, I have my finger back, normal. Not even a scar. And then there was... Pardon?
He told you about that?
Oh, yes, because I give those lectures in the class, you know. When
then he came and told you what happened.
But well, he showed me. He showed me, and so I saw his finger back. But we all, he said, now, because this is healed, could be a laughing matter. But otherwise, he said, I'll be crippled. And so therefore, Reiki, you know, I give credit to Reiki. I said, yes. But it's a good thing you took the lesson.